Hello and welcome to another episode of Dermatilla Diaries. Today I have with me Laura, who has battled with dermatillomania, also known as compulsive skin picking, for 20 years. Only in the last 2 years since having a small child has Laura realised that skin picking was actually a medical condition. So in this episode, I'll be speaking with Laura on Laura's personal journey so far and what has helped her with her skin picking disorder. So hello, Laura.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for joining. How are you today?
Yeah, not too bad. It's an early start, but that's not unheard of with a two-year-old running around like, yeah.
I can't like imagine.
Yeah, it's like a hurricane, a small hurricane.
Oh, gosh. How often do they sleep through the night, or are you up like?
Generally, yeah. I'd say we're probably on about 90% sleeping through the night now, and the other 10% is, just up to him, I guess. We have no control over it. We do have the odd night where he's up every 2 hours, or we have to get him into bed with us, but needs must. You just do what you got to do to get through, really.
Yeah, and I have to ask, are the terrible twos real?
They really are. I mean, it's constant tantrums about, I don't want to wear those shoes. I don't want to eat that thing. I don't want to have a bath, even though he loves baths. He just likes to kick off about it now. Although I have heard the three-nager is worse. So,
oh, wow. It doesn't stop. It not just even transforms.
Yeah, I might not even be through the rest of it yet.
Keep going. Oh, you're a survivor, at least of the terrible twos soon.
Yes,
and then hopefully the next hurdle won't be as fine. But he sounds dead cute. Awesome. So today, obviously, I wanted to talk about a bit more of your journey, and especially with you having a small child, because for me, myself, my own journey over, I think it's been about 16 years almost, throughout that time, I've always kind of kidded myself like, oh, I'm just going to grow out of skin picking, or I'm going to stop when I go to university. I'm going to stop when I have a boyfriend or whatever. And there's all these like little milestones in my life that I'm like, I'll stop when that happens. And then I find that doesn't happen, it just continues. And I really wanted to chat with you today also on the fact that, you know, with parenthood, because that's not something I have any experience in personally. And I think it's really interesting. It would be a really interesting perspective, because obviously becoming a parent, your life changes, right?
Yeah, massively. Yeah. I think that the biggest thing is with dermatillomania is often you do pick in isolation. So you do it when you're alone. And when you have a child, it's very hard to be alone. You know, I do still go to the bathroom, but he will just open that bathroom door up now and walk right in. And then I have to stop. And there's a whole other layer of dermatillomania now, because I think where I would usually get a bit of alone time and quiet time, that's non-existent now. It's really hard to get that. I can't just sort of take myself off and say I'm going to have 10 minutes to myself, because I mean, I could shut the door, but then I can still hear it all going on. It's not the same as pre-baby, and there really isn't a lot of resources out there for being a parent and having dermatillomania. I have seen things where parents would become parents for the first time, have a child, and then start picking as a result of that. And it's kind of linked with postpartum depression and anxiety. But I've never seen anybody that already had dermatillomania and then had a child, and then it just kind of ramped up. So for me, when I had him, was probably the first time I realized that it was a problem. Weirdly, I knew it was a problem because it was interfering with my social life. I would miss parties if I had picked my skin really badly. So it was just a whole different kettle of fish once I had him. And you know, I did have the postpartum depression after having him, and that obviously just made it so much worse. And I would find that as a small baby, I would be holding him for hours on end throughout the day, waiting for my husband to come home. And as soon as he came home, I would just run off and pick.
Wow.
I just needed that release. I just need that time for me. And that's the thing with dermatillomania, is it is that kind of, I think you've referred to it before, like it's like a pressure thing, isn't it? It's like a pressure cooker. You've got to kind of release the valve almost. It becomes this unbearable urge that just creeps up on you, and all of a sudden you feel like, I'm going to explode if I don't do this thing right now. So it has been really difficult, but in a sense it was good, because having my son and having the postpartum depression and then having the dermatillomania ramp up is what forced me to start actually taking it seriously and looking into what is this thing and why can't I stop.
It's amazing that that you're being so proactive with that, because that's a presumably an additional challenge to, you know, quite a large adjustment in your own life, but something that I think many of us will kind of see as a safety blanket or something that, you know, you go to when you just need a moment of release, or so it feels, a moment to yourself and to just feel that bit of satisfaction. To have that kind of, I suppose, compromised, or in some moments like in jeopardy, that must have been quite tough for you, because up until that point in your life when it was just down to what you wanted to do in your own schedule, and not having any interference in those alone moments, to all of a sudden having a small child just run in and just be like, hello, like, you know, that's quite
it's quite intense. And I think the biggest thing is, when you have a child, I think that one thing people don't tell you about is mum guilt, or I should say parent guilt, because I'm sure my husband gets it as well. And it's basically, you just feel guilty about everything. And I think with him walking in on me at times when I am picking my skin, it's now another thing to worry about and feel guilty about, because I think, if he sees me doing it, is he then going to think that's normal? Is that how he's going to pick up the behaviour? Because when I was younger, I do remember seeing my mum do it.
I saw my dad do it.
Yeah, I remember you saying, when I watched one of your videos, and I thought, it's so, I do wonder if there's a part of it that's almost slightly learned behaviour, because I don't know. It's a weird one, but I now have this huge guilt that, oh, because I do it, does that mean he's going to do it? And that's quite difficult to deal with emotionally as well. But I think for me, it's so intrinsically linked to depression, anxiety, low mood, and just ultimately just not having that time for me to breathe. And that just makes it so much more difficult to deal with.
And so have you found that because of that, have the urges increased, or has it been kind of the same, or just in more kind of, I don't know, like time capsuled moments? Maybe they're more intense, but certain different times or something.
Yeah, because I think I would say before, I would probably spend hour-long stints, you know, where the clock's going but you don't know it's going because you're just so in that moment. So those were kind of what my picking sessions used to look like, but now it is just literally as and when. So now I find that there are just lots of them literally when I can just get it in throughout the day. And that is different, because I'd find if I, for instance, had a long picking session, you could then afterwards, you know, do the self-care, put the nice moisturizing products in your face. But when you're doing it so, like, you know, sparingly between sessions, and you're just literally bum, 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 it's difficult to do that, because if you put cream on that area, and for me at the moment, it's really my chest. I found that I've kind of got better with my face, and my chest is now suffering, because it seems to be, if you stop doing it somewhere, something else picks up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was doing that. But yeah, obviously if you try and put cream on that area and then you're revisiting it an hour later, you're not really, the cream's not really doing anything. Whereas I'd find usually if I did one of those long picking sessions, that would probably be it for the day. Whereas now it's just constant.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but for myself, if that pressure, after a picking session, especially because the chest is a commonly picked area for me as well. And I'm the same in the sense that I don't focus as much on my face anymore, but it's instead of not picking as much, it's just transferred to another area. And the chest is not an area that's, well, it's not really on show. Like, I don't really walk around with it out. So like, so it's subconsciously an area that I feel like, oh, I can conceal it easier than my face. But it takes a lot of time out of your schedule. And you know, especially if it is, you know, one of those long picking sessions where an hour's went by, for example, for me, I found that when I've had those, that pressure, or that feeling of disappointment, guilt, low moods immediately after, that then makes me have that urge to go back to that area. But not because I want to, like, not because it's not satisfying anymore at that point, you know, but it's still kind of the pressure is keeping me in that loop, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, weirdly, I almost don't have time to have that low mood afterwards anymore, because it's snapped back to mum reality. So I do find that, you know, I've sort of sought help by resources and stuff. The one thing that I have taken away from it is after I do pick now, I don't really get that as lower mood now. Like, I will feel like, oh, why did you do that? But I think the key thing for me has been to be kind to myself and talk to myself as if I would talk to my best friend. So I say to myself, you know, it's okay that you did that. It's okay that you don't feel great about it right now. In that moment, you obviously needed to do it for whatever reason. Let's not get down about it. Let's not be harsh to ourselves about that. It's not something you can control at the moment, so, you know, let's get over it, basically. But I do find it, being a parent has helped with that in a sense, because you don't have time to just dwell and get miserable. Like before, when I would spend hours picking, afterwards I would probably just crawl into bed for a few hours and just cry or feel really rough and sad about it and angry at myself, and I just hate myself. And now I've just tried to cut that cycle, in the sense of I'm just not going to feel bad about this anymore. It's something I do at the moment. I don't have the mental capacity to control it, and that's okay. Sometimes it is just okay. Sometimes we just need to do it, and it's not worth putting that extra pressure on ourselves of don't do it, because I'm sure, as you know, if you say to yourself, I'm not going to do it today, I'm not going to do it the next day, and you might have a few days where you think, oh my gosh, I'm cured, I'm never going to do it again. Yeah. Wow. And then all of a sudden it just hits you and you end up doing it. Like for me, I would end up doing it like doubly as much. Mm-hmm. And because it is just like kind of releasing that valve on that pressure cooker.
Totally. And I've always found that counting days just hasn't worked for me, because even though, you know, a couple of days in, a few days in, I don't think I've ever got to a few days really when I was trying to count the days, but a couple of days in, say, like, you know, feeling good, skin starting to heal, that confidence is going. But it's also, it was unrealistic of me in the past when attempting that method to believe that that was actually going to just solve it, that I would just not want to do it anymore. Like the results of clear skin would be enough and I would just not do it anymore. Because I don't know about yourself, but for me, you know, seeing these marks and stuff, it becomes normal. It's my normal when I see them, you know, and that's quite, I think it's very much a longer term approach to kind of managing, rather than searching for this cure, especially through counting days, but also to understand that it's not going to just be a case of, well, I want to look normal, I want to have clear skin like other people, and I'm just going to wait it out and then it will happen. Because when something stressful happens, which does, because life is life. There will be something that comes out of the blue, your car broke down or whatever, and you're just like, oh my god, like then that pressure cooker is on full blast. It's like, oh, wait until we get home and we have that moment. Or even if it's, you know, a predicament where you can't have those big sessions and you're like, the picking starts now, do you know what I mean? It's like, I can't wait until later. I can't have that designated time to myself. So, you know, the picking is pretty much consistent throughout the day to make up for it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I completely relate with that. And I mean, oh, don't even talk to me about summer holidays or going swimming. That just produces so much skin anxiety. I just start prepping beforehand, like, oh, I've just got to stop and not do it for a few days. But I mean, I can name the last day that I had a day without picking, and it was my birthday last year, November the 11th. That was the last day that I can remember that I literally did not pick all day. Wow. And the only thing different about that day was I took the day off work. There was no pressure. My husband took my little boy for the day. Mm. And I just had a day of, you know, I ordered like a graze platter for lunch with, you know, like nice cheeses and meats.
Nice.
And relaxed day. And I didn't even think about picking. And I keep going back to that day because there must be something about that day. I mean, if I could replicate that in my normal day-to-day life, that would be wonderful. But obviously it's not realistic to not work and not have the pressure.
And the platter. I would love to have the daily platter.
That would add up, I imagine, quite possibly. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I have covered in counselling throughout the years is what is it about those days? And it is just that there is no pressure on me. There's no, I don't need to be somewhere by a certain time. I mean, that can really ramp up the anxiety for me if I know that I need to, you know, my little boy needs to be at soft play at this time, or I need to take him to his nan's at this time. All of those things, it is just the pressure, and it mounts up, and it's just such a big thing, dermatillomania, and it's not known enough about. There's not enough research about it, and it's really difficult to find people that can help you with it when there aren't really specialists around. I mean, I think I found a specialist in London, but it was, you know, in excess of £200 a session or something like that, and I just don't have that money, sadly.
Totally.
Otherwise I would be like, take my money.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I too have over the years looked at, you know, what treatments, private treatments or specialists are out there, people that are, you know, specific experts for helping to manage the bodily focused repetitive behavior like compulsive skin picking. And I found the same in the sense that, you know, these hourly sessions, or if it's a course or whatever it is, are just really, really expensive. And it's like, you know, for me, I know that pressure is a big part of my compulsive skin picking. And I think one area that we don't that often link to it is the huge pressure around finances. And it's hard enough to kind of justify, I think, especially if you're not one who often practices self-care and self-love and allows yourself to kind of indulge in something that's going to help you and benefit you. It's hard to justify that spend on yourself, especially if you've, you know, if you've got bills to pay and you've got, I don't know, events that you've said that you're going to pay for and X, Y, Z, or children they've got, you know, provide for. That's hard to be like, oh yeah, I'll just pay out, you know, hundreds of pounds for an hour and I'll go and see them multiple times. It's like, and I think that just creates more of this feeling of a black abyss of feeling very isolated and alone. It's like, wow, there's help out there, but I can't even get to it. It's just, it feels so far away from me.
Yeah, it's a very isolating disorder, definitely, because you do feel like, I know that you are very open about it, but you do feel like you can't really tell people about this thing and that people will judge you for it. Well, I've kind of reached an age now, I think, where I realise that if I told someone about it and they reacted badly, then that person isn't for me. And exactly. That's it. But I think I definitely had people pleaser syndrome for pretty much all of my 20s and before that even. And that's what kind of prevented me from ever speaking about it. I mean, that and the fact that I thought it's just a bad habit because that's what I was told. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And oh, the amount of money I've spent on skincare products throughout the years thinking that this will solve it. I could probably put a mortgage down on another house.
If someone sat me down and was like, do you want to know how much you spent? Like, no, now get the hell out of here. Don't tell me. Don't put them all out in front of me, especially the stuff that I've started and haven't finished. And it's just sad. You know,
yeah, exactly. It's like that Shop Well for Less program, isn't it? Where they
that's exactly it.
All out in front of you. Do you know how much this adds up to? No, don't tell me.
Yeah, or like, have you seen that show Secret Eaters? I think it's called, and it's like they have cameras in, and then they're like, how much, what did you eat today? And they're like, oh, I ate this. And they're like, do you want to know what you really did eat? And then they show you, you know, that would be like, you know, skin picking. So, just a little bit on the arms. Yeah. Do you want to know what you really did?
And then they put this thing on in like five times, double time. They're like, yeah, this is over the course of 4 hours. Oh, right. Okay.
Great.
Did it a few times then. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that explains this redness situation going on here. Yeah. Then, okay.
That will be it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You got me. So previously, you briefly spoke about offline about how you saw therapy, and there's been a couple resources that you've been using and have been really beneficial. But one of them was a therapist, not specifically in dermatillomania, but actually in trichotillomania, which is compulsive hair pulling.
Yes. Yeah. So I just went onto the counsellor's website. I can't remember what the exact web address is, but it's all the registered counsellors in the UK. And you can select issues that you want to deal with. So you've got things on there like bereavement, depression, bipolar disorder, all sorts of things. And then I spotted there was a trichotillomania one, which from sort of research and such, I'd realised that dermatillomania and trichotillomania can be quite similar in some senses. And so I found a therapist and I started to see her originally in person because she wasn't too far from me, and then COVID hit. so we started doing the sessions on Zoom. But that was probably one of the most helpful counsellors that I've seen because she understood trichotillomania. She was able to understand some of the transferable aspects of dermatillomania and apply that to the therapy. I wouldn't necessarily say that I picked less after seeing her because COVID, everything else going on, things changed massively, and I returned to work after maternity leave during that time. So there was a lot of stressful situations happening, but I did start to feel like after seeing her, I finally understood a lot of aspects of dermatillomania, why I pick, trying to be curious about it rather than being really angry at it and angry at myself for having this thing. And I think just being curious about it, being mindful about it, understanding it more, those can only ever be good things, right? Because those are the things that ultimately help you to be kinder to yourself in those moments when you are doing it or after you've done it, because you can start to think, well, why did I do it? What do I need right now? What's wrong with me? If I was someone else looking at me right now, what would I think that I need? If I was looking at Laura through another lens, what does Laura need right now? And that is when I started to realize that I felt very, very alone and unsupported. And it was because of having a baby and all of those kind of things. And it wasn't that I genuinely was unsupported, because my husband is amazing, my family are amazing, but I just felt so isolated, particularly because of the dermatillomania. It just made me feel so inward almost. I was just introverted, and I'm not really an introverted person. I'm quite extroverted, really. But it just made me realize, I was like, God, I really do feel alone. And I never gave myself the opportunity or the space to realize this before, to see this before. So often when I pick, it is because I'm feeling like unsupported and low, or I need to pick up the phone and speak to someone. And I think, you know, that's why COVID was such a big hit for everybody, obviously. But obviously, if you had dermatillomania or trichotillomania, the general consensus seemed to be that everybody started picking more or pulling more or nail biting more, etc. And I think that's, you know, that kind of shows as well that it's got something to do with human connection and not feeling connected to other people.
Totally. I completely resonate with what you're saying. For me, definitely, I can feel when my oxytocin battery is low. So the kind of love chemical in the brain, for anyone that doesn't know what oxytocin is, like, you know, when you hug someone or you've had a really great phone call with a best friend or a family member, and you just feel really topped up. And you feel your battery's loaded again, and you're like, ah, like that's the oxytocin. And I know for myself, I can really feel it. If I don't have that, I feel like very alone. And because my family are in Newcastle, where I'm originally from, and I'm down south in Surrey, I can, you know, there's been many times where I felt isolated, and then just like what you've said, the compulsive skin picking makes you feel further isolated and within yourself, because especially after a skin picking session, you don't feel great. You don't really feel like you want to go out and see people and do something. You just kind of feel like you want to stay indoors even more and kind of go inwards even more. And even though you know that's not going to help you feel better, and it really is kind of a, as you said, like trying to see from a different perspective, a different angle through the lens, like, what do you need? And I think in a previous episode, I talked about how it's kind of like another language. Kind of like, you know, part of yourself. Or I like to envision it like a little animated dinosaur, Dermatillosaurus. and it can't talk to me in, you know, in English language or you know, human language, and it's communicating in a way that it's trying to tell me something. The dermatillomania is trying to tell me something, and it's like, what is that? And I think, like what you said, when you take a step mentally, you take a step out of the situation and just kind of, what is it that I need right now? Like, am I tired? Like, because I know for a fact, one of the things I do a lot, the longer skin picking sessions, if I'm alone in the bathroom after getting ready for bed, taking makeup off and stuff, I know that really I'm tired. I just need to go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like things like that.
For me, at least, I'm like, I'm really tired, I should go to bed. But then I lay there picking for like half an hour and I think, why didn't I just go to sleep? Yeah. Get it? Why don't I just turn off the light and go to sleep?
Yeah, it just it makes perfect sense. But then afterwards, you're like, why do I do this? Like, I'm still tired. Now I'm just tired and inflamed. Like,
I've done nothing good in this situation.
I guess it's when you kind of have that perspective and you try and exercise that perspective each time. I don't know about you, but I found it a bit easier to be a bit more kinder, a bit more patient with myself, because I try and find the funny in it, you know, like, especially in those situations, it's like, oh, that was really helpful. Like, good. Like, okay, cool. Right. Well, should we go to sleep now?
They say humor is the best medicine, don't they? I couldn't agree more. I think you have got to laugh about it. I mean, I think I was talking to someone else that had dermatillomania and she went, oh, you know, sometimes I'll use tools, and I was like, oh, me too, should we get t-shirts? so you know, but I think you have to have a sense of humor, otherwise, you know, it is just all consuming and it will become this big beast, and that little tiny dermatillosaurus will become a huge one that just eats you up, and we don't want that.
No, we want it cute.
It's definitely important to laugh about. I was also going to say about OCD action, which we spoke about when yes. we were emailing, which is basically it's an OCD charity, and they do all different types of work. It's mainly volunteers that work there, and they have fortnightly support calls. They usually do one on Zoom, and then the other one in the month is on the telephone or Skype, and you can dial in. And essentially it's all people who have trichotillomania or dermatillomania. Some people have both, and it's just a safe space essentially for people to go and talk about their weeks, talk about how they're feeling. Sometimes I will join and I will just listen in. I will just put it on mute and listen in, and that's okay too. The idea is, if you don't feel like talking that week, you don't have to. You can just listen to other people's experiences, and often that's quite helpful. But it's a really supportive space. It's all confidential. Everything you say in there is not passed on. So it's a completely safe space for people to just be honest and open about how they're feeling and how these disorders are affecting us. And I found that to be a really useful resource because, again, although I don't feel that it's massively helped my skin picking, because I don't know if anything ever will massively, it just makes me feel better afterwards. And we sometimes end with a little 10-minute meditation session as well, which is nice. Kind of grounds you after the session, and it's in the evenings as well, so if you work during the day you can still attend. But they have they do all different types of things. They have resources on their website, so it's ocdaction.org, I think. I will double check. There's so many different types of OCD, and the thing is, I think we were discussing this offline before we came on, but OCD is obviously such, I think a lot of people think OCD, oh, that's just cleaning a lot or flicking a light switch on and off 50 times before you leave. Actually, it's a lot more complex than that. And although dermatillomania and trichotillomania haven't been scientifically absolutely proved to be an obsessive compulsive disorder, there are aspects of it which are obsessive and compulsive, which I think is why OCD action have kind of taken the opportunity to put it up under their umbrella. But it's not like you're there and you say, yes, I have OCD, or, you know, and there are people there that also have ADHD or, you know, all other types of mental illnesses as well. But it's not a concrete solution, obviously. It's just a place to go and air your thoughts and not feel judged at all. Like, that is one thing I will say there. I don't feel judged. I can say anything about how I feel, you know, and even saying sometimes, you know, we spoke about it before, in the moment when you're skin picking or hair pulling, it feels good. But almost sometimes it's a bit taboo to say that. And this space allows people to say that. Mm-hmm. And don't feel abnormal. You just feel accepted. And I think that is such a big thing when you have this disorder. I mean, ultimately, all humans want to be accepted, right? We all want human connection, to be accepted, be part of a community. And OCD action has definitely provided that for me. I still wouldn't say that I have OCD, but some people will say, yeah, I think I do have OCD. But it's up for interpretation. And I think ultimately, however you feel is right. No one can tell you how you feel is wrong.
Absolutely. And I think especially with compulsive skin picking, there's so many people that have other mental conditions that are closely interconnected with that. And it's not a one size fits all. Everybody has different reasons for how, you know, they're on their dermatillomania journey, how they've got to be there. And you know, even different way, different areas that they pick, different rituals within it. And so, and I definitely have found that, you know, from speaking to people over the past couple of years where, you know, there's some areas that are really noticeable, and then you'll get that someone else who just doesn't pick on that area. And so, you know, some people there's been one or two over the years that messaged me, and it's like, do you really have it? Because your skin on your face is clear. And it's like, well, A, yes, I can Yeah, I can show you.
I mean,
that would be kind of a pretty low point to kind of fabricate. Yeah, but obviously, I understand from their perspective as well. It's like people. It's a big thing to kind of see in someone else something that they're going through, and also like it, in this example, I remember speaking to someone, and it's like the areas that you're most self-conscious about, you tend to focus your attention on those specific areas and other people as well. So say if it was, you know, your face, and then you look at someone else's face more than, say, I don't know, arms or other areas, which I thought was really interesting. But going back to what we were saying before I go on a tangent, it really isn't a one size fits all. And so it's really good to look at these options that are available, especially like free, because, you know, speaking with OCD Action doesn't cost you a penny. You don't have to be diagnosed with OCD to check these out. There are, you know, the similarities. And as you say, that's why they've taken it on under their umbrella, just as another helpful tool in the toolkit. It's not a case of like, you know, do this and you'll be cured. It's like, no, this will help you manage it. And, you know, as the awareness of dermatillomania and other bodily focused repetitive behaviors is increasing year on year, there's more things being created to help us manage. And it's just a case of, you know, researching or word of mouth, like speaking with other people, whether it's online or offline, and getting to know these options that are available. Because I'm not sure about you, but previous attempts for me, a good few years ago, reaching out to doctors, or, you know, speaking to a therapist, and they just didn't really know. They were just kind of shaking their head and kind of throwing antidepressants at me, like, go, take them, like,
take them and go away. Don't come back.
So, yeah, didn't really. Okay.
Yeah. Did you self-diagnose, or were you diagnosed in the end?
So for me, I went to the doctors twice. I went to one, and they just gave me some antidepressants, and, you know, shipped me off on my way. And then the second time around, because I tried that, I felt really let down by that experience, and I knew it wasn't depression. Depression wasn't what was making me skin pick. I was feeling low because of the skin picking, but it wasn't the root cause, right? And so I really wanted to get to the root cause. So I looked into the internet, looking at all these options, like trying to research myself, because I felt like this is going to be quite tricky if, you know, my thoughts were crushed on, oh, the GP will know. Well, the GP didn't know. And so next time around, if I'm going to go to the doctor, I kind of have to be ready with some information to provide, because the first time around, they just shook their head and thought it was a habit. And I knew in my heart from reading on this, I was like, no, all these symptoms, I'm ticking them off. Like, this is totally these feelings, this feeling of like being completely out of control. I know it's not habit. I know it's more towards this. So for me, I printed it out. I printed the information out, and I went to the doctors, and I was like, this is what I'm dealing with, and it's really affecting me. And so in the end, they diagnosed me based on this conversation. But it was kind of up to me, which is a shame. And I hope that, you know, this was a good few years ago. So I really hope that with more awareness and more people hopefully building in confidence to speak to their GP about it, then hopefully over time there'll be more emphasis on the research and then the treatments available, so that people feel like they can totally speak to their medical professional with full confidence that there's going to be, you know, various options available that are really going to help them manage it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's only by having these conversations that we're ever going to normalize it. But once we've normalized it and it does become more spoken about and accepted, then hopefully that will be the prompt for, you know, the NHS, obviously in England or wherever it may be, to actually employ people that are experienced in it or to train people in it so that they understand the disorder, rather than us having the pressure on us, the added pressure that we don't need, to go into a doctor's surgery and say, this is what I have. This is what I have. Because that's essentially what I had to do over Christmas, because I ended up getting an infection. So I had to go to the doctors. I ended up seeing a nurse and she was absolutely lovely. And I told her, I have dermatillomania. It's a skin picking disorder. It's obsessive. It's compulsive. I can't stop. And she was really lovely about it, but she did ask me several times, is it self-harm? And that was a bit frustrating. Like, she was lovely. And I did say to her, it's definitely not. It's not about that. But it's, you know, it is an added pressure on us to kind of educate people, yeah, and you know, health professionals in what we have. And that is a bit sad. But I do hope that the resources will become more readily available the more we talk about it, the more we raise awareness about it, because that is going to be really a really important step forward, hopefully.
Absolutely. And that was really, that took a lot of courage, you know, for you to speak with that nurse and to say, look, this is what I'm struggling with. And, you know, after many years of doing it behind closed doors, and I don't know at that point if you were talking to other people, close family members or friends or something, like, other than OCD action, where you've got that, I'm guessing you have you're more anonymous there, you know. With speaking before speaking to the nurse, did you speak to anybody in your life about you're going through?
So I mean, obviously my husband, first and foremost, he knew it was a problem. I obviously, he didn't know it was this dermatillomania until I started to research it, and then I started to educate him, and I was sending him resources and videos, and I was like, watch this, read this, and then you'll understand a bit more. Because I think the automatic reaction from a lot of family members and friends is just stop hurting yourself, and they don't understand how that's really not helpful at all. It was my husband first, and then I started to talk to my mum about it, because I remembered that moment of when I saw her doing it. And she was really kind of taken aback when I started to send her resources, because she was so, I do have this. I mean, wow. Hers is a lot more well managed now than when sort of we were younger. And I do think it's probably got a lot to do with the fact that now she has our house back again, because we've all moved out. her. And then I opened up to my best friend about it, and then another very close friend. Other than that, I haven't told lots of people, and it's not kind of because I'm avoiding saying it now. It's if they asked about anything, I would tell them at this point. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of, I feel like I've told the people that I need to tell, that people that are really important to me and I know, you know, won't judge me. If anybody else at this point asks about it, I'll tell them. Mm-hmm. And then if they, for whatever reason, act a bit strangely, then, as I said earlier, that person's just not for me. And I think that's just something I'm going to have to work through as and when it comes up. But I have really, really supportive friends and family, and they have been really brilliant with it. You know, and they just ask me questions about things. And it's nice now if I say, oh, I don't really feel like I'm going out, one of my friends will say, oh, have you been picking? And I might be like, yeah, I have actually. So it's nice now. And they should go, oh, you know, just put some makeup on. No one cares. Come on. And that's quite good, because I don't feel like that again makes you just feel less alone. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you've told your friend and they're like, oh, I don't care. I don't care what your face looks like or whatever. Just put a bit of makeup on. Come on, let's go out. Don't worry. You'll have a mask on anyway.
Yeah, that's so true.
I love masks for that reason. and that reason alone. It has been quite a good experience for me, I guess, in that sense, because I haven't had anyone sort of say, oh, what's that? And I think probably majority of people wouldn't, but there is always that niggling voice in the back of your head that thinks, what are they really thinking about me now?
Totally. I mean, I think that's a reason for myself that I put off talking to loved ones about it for so long, was that there was so much self-judgment, that self-critical voice in my head, judging, you know, everything, that I thought, well, the last thing I want to do is put myself in a position where I may hear them say what I fear they'll say, like what my judgmental voice is telling me every day. And that really scared me. I was like, what if they judge me as much as I judge me? But in reality, my loved ones that I reached out to were so supportive. Yes, they didn't really understand. And I've had to say, you know, dermatillomania a lot, slowly too. Dermatillomania, you know, because they're like, that is a funky word. But like, and just helping them in simple terms, kind of educating them just like on what you do. And even, you know, just sending a couple of resource links or whatever, just so that they can understand. But also, I think as well, if you're speaking to family members, especially if they are, say, like a parent or an older sibling or someone that like naturally just wants to fix it for you, like wants to like, what can I do? Or even like a partner, like, okay, that's good. What do I need to do to help? It's kind of already expecting that kind of question so that you have the answer ready. Like, you know, this is what I do. And to help it, you know, it would be great if you could help me like this way, even if it's just like sometimes letting me vent or coming outside with me for a walk, or just like, you know, taking the child out for an hour on a Saturday or something, just to give me like some time that I know I'm going to have alone time for, or something like that, just so that they can understand, but they also know how they can help support you. And then by having that conversation, you feel less alone, you feel a lot more understood. And then hopefully you can get something out of it where you're better supported longer term and you don't feel a pressure by having that conversation, if it makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like you say, I think most people will be supportive, but it's, you know, the burden is on us, unfortunately, to provide the resources and things like that. And I think for a long time I didn't really understand what I did need. So even when my husband was saying, what can I do, how can I help you, I didn't really know what to say. So I think that was quite frustrating for him as well. But now he understands that sometimes I do just need that alone time. So he is getting a lot better at taking our little one out for, you know, an hour here or an hour there, just to give me some space, take them for a walk with the dog or something. And all of those little things do help, because they just give me that space to do the self-care and, you know, the nourishing activities that we need to do to kind of fill up our pot, you know, because otherwise I just won't get it.
Yeah.
It's getting better in the sense that I do feel like now, I think with a newborn, it is quite intense because you are glued to them for the first sort of 3-4 months. But after that, you start to get these little moments back for yourself. But you know, it's been a journey. It's been a thing. I do feel like I'm probably through the very worst of it now. And it can hopefully only just get better from here.
That's amazing. And so on that, if you were to meet a younger self, what advice would you give them?
I think ultimately I would say to myself, be nicer to yourself. Stop self-loathing and blaming everything on you, because often things aren't in your control and there was nothing in a situation you could have done to make it better. And just be kinder, just be kinder to yourself, really, and don't take everything so personally. I think I definitely had a habit when I was younger to just take everything so personally. And sometimes, and often, actually, I would say probably 99% of the time, if someone is saying something to you or doing something to you, it says everything about that person and nothing about you. And 100%. I think it's taken me my whole life to kind of understand that statement.
So I know it's been an hour now, so I won't keep much longer, but the last question, because I love to know what kind of mantra, quote, poem like that really resonates with you, if you have one to share.
Yeah, I do, and I've actually got it over there. This isn't very professional, but bear with me.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
I want to let it, because I wrote it down. So,
love that dress, by the way, Lady in Red. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you. So my favourite quote is, if you have good thoughts, they will shine out of your face like sunbeams and you will always look lovely. And that's by the lovely, wonderful Roald Dahl.
Oh,
I think that's such a nice statement.
It's so positive.
Yes, it is. It's lovely. And Roald Dahl is just a genius, obviously. So if he says it, it must be true.
Exactly. If Roald Dahl said it, it's true. I'm taking that. That's 100%. Well, thank you so much, Laura. It's been such an amazing conversation. I've absolutely loved it. And
thank you.
I'm so grateful that you've taken some time out of your diary to chat with me today, because I think, wow, it's so lovely speaking to you, getting to know you, hearing about your journey, and I'm sure it will help other people, you know, feel more heard and understood. So thank you so much.
Right, thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity and the platform to share my story. If I just make one person feel less alone, then I think I've done my job.
I'm sure you will, because you make me feel less alone. So that's the one down. You're off the mark. So,
yay! Oh, thank you, Kim.
No problem at all. Well, have a lovely rest of your day, and we'll speak really soon. Thank you so much, Laura.
No problem. Take care.
Bye. Bye.